Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, the business podcast for smart people who appreciate the insights found in a good conversation. That guy sitting at the end of the proverbial bar is your host, David J.P. Fisher, but everyone around here just calls him D. Fish. He's an author, speaker, and business coach. Basically, he's a professional talker. So grab a glass of your favorite beverage, grab a seat, and join us for today's episode. Let's see where the conversation takes us.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another interesting conversation with an interesting person. And today, the part of interesting person is being played by my good friend, Catherine Morgan. Catherine is a career transition expert and business consultant to consultants. She has carved out an unusual niche of helping entrepreneurs find corporate jobs they love, which is definitely the reverse of many consultants that I know in the space. Hi, Catherine. How are you?
I'm fine, David. How are you?
I am living the dream, but now I'm afraid I'm in trouble. David, you know, when somebody calls me David, I'm like, uh-oh, what did I do wrong? It's usually my mom or my wife yelling at me.
Sorry, D. Fish.
It's all good. It's all good. I do have to, before we dive into our conversation, say thank you to our sponsors today, Old Irving Brewery on the north side of Chicago. I am drinking their Della Kolsch, and it is a delightful, it's a delightful Della. I'm really digging it. So thank you to Old Irving Brewery for bringing this interesting conversation to you. And speaking of, let's dive into that. Catherine, what do you think the career path of the future is going to look like? And when I say future, like 10 years down the line.
I can't predict 10 years down the line. And I think, you know.
All right. Good call.
The rate of change of business and technology has gotten so dizzyingly fast that I hesitate to predict more than 6 months, a year, 2 years in advance. But what I will say is that I think it's not going to be a path. I think it's more likely to be like a ball through a pinball machine. And you'll hit this and you'll hit that and you'll go out and then the flapper will put you back up. Because I think we're going to, many of us, certainly white collar, brain renting types of professionals like you and me, are going to flip in and out of being consultants or freelancers or corporate employees or having our own business. And I just don't, you know, certainly the corporate, you know, 9 to 5, nobody works that, you know, 8 to 6 is, you know, going to be there, but it's going to be less and less full-time employees and more contract and project employees. So even people who are kicking and screaming against this trend are going to have to at some point embrace it.
Gotcha. So instead of kind of like just a corporate ladder that you climb up, it's kind of a, I heard it once described as like a lattice where you could go up, you could go sideways, you could just go into a completely different industry. You could, you know, reinvent yourself. You could, as I know some of the work you do, you might be out on your own for a while and then be like, hey, I'm going to go in as a director of X, Y, and Z at a company for a couple of years. So it's not going to be very linear is what I'm kind of getting at. Would that be right?
And what you're not sort of, let me add something to the equation. So you, the corporate employee, are trying to, you know, progress however you want, either with your learning, with your salary, hopefully both. And, you know, things happen. You get married, you have a kid, you have a health diagnosis, you have a parent that you have to help with end of life. I mean, like, stuff happens in your life. So one choice where you're like, you know, I've got a boatload of energy, I'm ready to hit the gas. And then, you know, another point in your life, you're like, dude, my motivation right now is flexibility. I'm willing to work, but I need to work it around taking my elderly parent to dialysis or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and it's interesting because I do think that I'm seeing, and you probably have even a better perspective on this, is that it used to be, or at least it seemed that it used to be, that your work kind of defined the other things that you could do in your life, or it defined like how you approach those other things in your life, as you mentioned, childcare or getting married or taking care of an elderly parent or dealing with a chronic illness. Now it does seem a little more, I don't know if it's normal is the right word, but it seems like people are kind of going, no, work is just a part of my, you know, I don't like the term holistic, but it's part of an integrated whole that I am. Would that be accurate?
Yeah. I think the way I look at it is kind of similar. At some points in our life, it makes sense to wrap our work around our life. And sometimes we do the reverse. Like, it sort of depends on what your drivers are at that moment.
Okay. So when people come to you, so this is, I think, really interesting where kind of the work you do. So, you know, I know that you have this piece of your practice where you're helping people who were often out on their own or freelancers or business owners and help them go back into the warm, snuggly embrace of the corporate world. What kind of drives people to that? Is it just all these different things that pop up in their life?
No, there's a couple primary drivers that I can identify.
Okay.
One of them might be that the best possible one is they had a successful exit, right? Someone bought their company, they got some money. It's, you know, nice to have in the bank, but it's either not enough, you know, to sustain them to quote unquote retirement, or they know they'd be bored out of their mind and they need to be working because their spouse would kill them. So,
right.
There's that part. That's the best possible scenario. Often people come to me because they had the business worked up until a certain point, and how to take it to the next level, the founders disagree, or the co-founders were married and they're getting divorced. Or
okay, yeah that'll
which,
do it.
Which happens. Or, you know, right. All of a sudden you're single and you're able to put in crazy hours in a tech startup, and now you're married with a young kid and you're like, hey, both of us can't be working in a startup. One of us has to get insurance, one of us has to have some perceived stability. Like, there's different drivers, but it's usually something about a need, and these guys aren't really lying to themselves. They know that, in fact, corporate's not, you know, more stable than having your own job, but they just like want a break for a little while. Or if they had a good experience in corporate and then sort of rolled out on their own, whether they were successful or not, I've had a lot of people who came in who actually did really well, and they missed having and mentoring a bigger team. They missed doing something bigger than they could do on their own. They missed having a budget to hire A-level talent. And mm-hmm. those are big drivers. I've had a bunch of executive women come through my practice with those being their drivers, that they just really wanted something bigger, well-funded,
sure.
Named brand, A-level players committed to making an impact. And that's fine. Like, there's no one right way to work, and we've got to get that out of our heads.
Right. Well, and I know, I mean, as a guy who's really had a quote unquote job for only 11 months of his adult life, I definitely, you know, prefer personally for the more independent entrepreneurial path. I joke that I'm pretty unemployable, I think, by now. Although, you know, everybody's got their price. And if anybody wants to throw a lot of money at me, I'm willing to talk.
Okay. Actually, but, David, I'm going to jump in because I have a friend who has kind of, in some ways, a similar background to you, sales trainer, social selling, all that stuff, and had his own mm-hmm. business. And he got recruited by a company to come in and build out their sales training and do their training delivery around the country. And they threw a bunch of cash at him. And he's like, yeah, you know what? I think this is going to really work for me.
Well, hey, so, you know, it's possible. You know, I don't know if I would like the corporate world, as my wife has said, you know, if, if you get a job, we're going to have to like also plan money for marriage counseling, just on the psychological side. But what I was going to say too, is like, there's nothing wrong with the corporate side. It's just very different, right? There, you have different headaches, you have different opportunities. And I think that there is something actually really powerful to this idea of realizing, hey, I like the entrepreneurial role, but, and mind you, I could see at some point in my life going, hey, I'd like, as you said, the resources and the budget to work with A-level talent. Not that I don't get to work.
Yeah. And an established brand makes it a lot easier to get sales appointments. You know, when I was working for Sharp Electronics and I was selling their really cool handheld toys when they first came out, I could just pick up the phone, call any trader down by the SIBO or the CME and say, hey, I've got these really cool toys. Can I come over? Like,
yeah.
It was the easiest way to get appointments ever. But let me sell you on this. Here's what happens when I talk to entrepreneurs who are thinking about having corporate jobs. The first thing I ask them is, have they ever worked in corporate previously? Because if they haven't, I know with 95% certainty that as soon as they get into the job search process, they'll back out. Because they won't realize how stupid and broken the recruiting process is for those companies.
Right.
And then I'll say, you know what? This process is so stupid. I don't know how you guys stay in business, and I'm not sure I want to work for you. I'm going to go, you know, launch this thing with my brother-in-law. So right. I know that those people will drop out. And I try and save them the 6 months of flailing before they get there. However, if somebody has been in corporate and, you know, had some good success there and, you know, did some fun things so they don't have just a terrible taste in their mouth, they have a good chance because they know what they're going back to. They've had some, they know what they're trading, you know, so,
right.
Which is fine. And I can get any entrepreneur, even you, to start drooling a little bit. I'll just walk you through the idea of having a regular paycheck and paid health insurance and time off where you don't have to check your emails and not having to worry about making payroll, cash flow problems, somebody else's issue. Like people who've had, and you and I are solo entrepreneurs, but people who've had, you know, a couple hundred people working for them, I will literally see them start to drool a little bit or a little tear in their eye. Like, oh my God, that sounds so great. And then I get more granular and I say, what if you only had to do, say, 80% of the time, the 20% of your job that you actually like? What if you weren't the CEO and the janitor? Mm-hmm. What if you really just got to concentrate on operations or business development or go-to-market strategy or whatever part of your job, you know, floats your boat, and you didn't have to worry about, you know, tax withholding and accounting software and, you know,
right.
Or whatever, you know, the thing you hate is. And then they just start to be like, oh, really? I'd only have to do like just this part of it?
Right. Then, of course, you go back to this broken systems and the politics and the boss. Well, and it's funny because, I mean, you have me drooling a little bit and I get it. What I tell people who actually are thinking of going into starting their own business or, you know, who maybe have already started and, you know, I come in as a coach for them, I'm like, there's problems everywhere. Like I love the work I do. I've, you know, been on my own now for almost 15 years. It's very fulfilling. I love it. I also hate lots of it, but even with all that being said, it's still work, right? You know, I always tell people my boss is a jerk. He's very demanding and he always knows when I'm playing hooky. But for me at this point in my life, the freedom and the flexibility it's given me to start a podcast where I get to talk to fun people like you to kind of pursue all these different avenues has been great. But I also get it. There's people who, you know, what you're describing is really just a better fit for them, right? I have a friend who has said, like, and she's a therapist. She goes, as much as I'd like to go out on my own, I need to have people around me. I need to have colleagues. I need to have that collegiate conversation on a, you know, regular basis. And so she works in a practice with other people, you know? And so even just kind of knowing what works for you and what works for you at that time in your life.
I'd like to put a pin in that, David, because that's a really, really important point for anybody who is either thinking about going out on their own or is out on their own and is not like loving it. Working by yourself and quote unquote living the dream, meaning, you know, having your headset and working in your pajamas and talking to people behind your laptop. It is my dream and I love it, but it is a recipe for clinical depression if you are an extrovert and you get jazzed by other people. Like, you have to right. know who you are and how you work. So when I'm talking to somebody, I too work with, but small business owners, but very specifically solo consultants. And I'm listening for that. Like, do they need to go, are they liking working at home or do they need to go get a co-working space now? Like, do mm-hmm. they need to bounce off other people, even if it's only at like the coffee machine or the printer or something, but still for a lot of people, being alone is like putting them in a bad neighborhood. Like, you don't want to be in your own head that much.
Yeah, right. Well, and so that kind of leads me to a question. What are the skills that somebody should cultivate? And skills might not be the right word, but we're kind of talking about this new, and I don't think it's brand new. I think it's been, you know, evolving for at least a decade or two. Just these new work modes, I think, as you call them. Like, what are the skills that, and talents and abilities, competencies that people can develop to be successful in this new modality, right? Because it used to be, I mean, my dad worked for the post office for 29 years. That was common. You got into an organization, you kind of worked your way up and into a certain area that you liked and were good at, or at least, you know, paid the bills, and you kind of stayed there.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're going to transition, I mean, you need a whole bunch of different skills. Because that's not really going to happen as much anymore. I think it's still going to.
Yeah, but it's not going to be very common. Less and less of the population. Like, those will exist, but I think you can't count on it. It's more like winning the lotto. Maybe you get lucky. So right. in order to thrive in the new world of work, I think you have to be comfortable with the fact that that is not going to be your normal. Like, don't expect it to be. I mean, be happy and grateful okay. if it is.
Sure.
Cultivate the state of mind of being a lifelong learner. Like, same old isn't going to work, right? Everything's changing. Everything's evolving. In one of my signature talks, Relaunch You, Liftoff After Layoff, I say that we are all self-employed at this point, whether we draw a paycheck from a company or not. Because we need to be in charge of our learning plans. We need to know what we need to learn to be better at what we do, or what learn to cue us up for what we'd like to be doing. Nobody's going to say, hey, you know, you got to get this, you know, diploma or accreditation or, you know, whatever. You have to know that, and you have to be in charge of that. Like, nobody's managing your career. Nobody's mentoring you. If you want mentors, go find them. If you want a coach, go hire one. Like, you have to be in charge of your career and where you want to go. Very hands-on. It's not passive anymore. Same old world isn't going to cut it. And a lot of organizations have gone to a meritocracy, essentially. You know, the person who does the best job gets promoted, and they don't care if you've been there 6 months or 6 years.
Right, right. Well, and I think what's really important about that is, as you said, we all kind of work for ourselves. I always tell people that we're all contractors. It's just, did you sign your employment contract with just one big client, i.e. you've got a job? Or, you know, do you sign your employment contract with a bunch of smaller clients, because you are a freelancer, you're a business owner, whatever it might be.
Gorgeous. I love that.
But so the idea of being an active learner, you know, I think in my first book, I talk about the power of being an autodidact. You have to be self-taught, because nobody's gonna care more than you do. I love that. I think that you're right. You can't be passive anymore. And in fact, I would almost say that not only are you in charge of doing the learning, but you have to be in charge. And this is, I think, very different. You have to be in charge of deciding where your career is going to go, right? Because there isn't just a path. Like you said, there's no path. There's not a defined path. Well, of course, you should be in this job for 2 years, and then you'll probably want to then get promoted to this level, and you'll be there for 3 years. And then maybe you'll get your MBA, and then you'll come back and do this next job for... No, it's going to be like, hey, you since you are... since companies have proven that they're very willing to get rid of people who have been around for a long time, and there's not that like that loyalty that we maybe was never there, but at least there was illusion of it. Yeah, you have to kind of always be proving why you're valuable. Again, whether that's to a corporate employer, whether that's to your clients, and in an evolving world of work, as you said, I mean that changes every day.
It does. It changes every day. It changes within, you know, organizations. I've worked for, you know, three of the former Big Five consulting firms, and they were all different. On if you looked at their website, they'd all look the same, but they right. were utterly different inside. Totally different corporate cultures. Different things were rewarded. Different types of personalities. Different behaviors were not tolerated. Utterly different.
Right. So you kind of have to, as I said, kind of find your own path. But besides kind of cultivating this mindset where you are open to learning, you're continuing to grow and evolve throughout your career, are there any other, you know, again, abilities, skills, competencies that you would recommend to somebody that you do see in your clients that it helps them be more successful in this new world?
Being open to the ideas that, you know, your what you want to do, you know, the work you want to do day in and day out may exist in different places than you think. Like it might not be a full-time job. Maybe mostly these people are being hired as contractors right now, and it might be a 6-month or a 12-month contract, and it might get renewed for 6 years, like my friend who got a right. job. At a company for 6 months that got renewed to a year, that got renewed every year, and everybody around him was getting laid off because they were full-time employees, which hit the books differently than contractors, and he stayed for 6 years. So, you know, getting rid of your idea that, oh, I have to be an employee, or, oh, I have to be a freelancer. Well, you know, the way you work might be different than you think. Like who's actually hiring for this? Like IT project managers, you know, yes, there's some in-house, but a lot of them are hired for a specific contract to get a specific result. And then they have to go look for the next thing. Like you just have to know what your specialty, where it is in the cycle and where to look for these opportunities. So that was a long way of saying mental flexibility. Don't get sold on one idea being right.
Right. Well, and it's really interesting because as we're having this conversation, at no point are we like, well, you should definitely have this specific skill set or this hard skill or these abilities or this certification. It really is kind of these ideas of awareness, self-reflection, mental flexibility. And that these are really important. I mean, not just for work, but for life. And I think as we're talking about this, I'm realizing the ability to take care of yourself mentally and emotionally is going to be really important because there is not the same level of security, whether or not it was real or not, or illusory. We used to think that, hey, you know, I'm going to go into my job and unless I do a really bad thing or the company goes out of business, I'm secure. Right, where we don't even have that anymore. You know, that's a problem if you're a 6 month or 1 year contractor. Yeah, it might get renewed or it might not, right? You know, at the end of it, those last couple of weeks of the contract, you start freaking out a little bit. So the ability to take care of yourself and your mental emotional state seems to be much more important these days than it used to be.
Yes. You hit on two big points there, which was self-awareness, you know, knowing where you are, what you're doing, how you're feeling, what's the right fit, and then self-care. also super important, and some fiscal responsibility, right? If you know that there's no such thing as security right now, you're going to be a little smarter with your money. You're going to put a little more away. You're going to know that your contract may or may not get renewed. It may take you 1 week or, you know, 1 year to get the next one. Like, you have to know the parameters and be smart with this.
Right, right. I like that. Just, yeah, a little fiscal responsibility. I had a good friend who was an actor, a professional actor, and, you know, she's on Broadway and all these things, and, you know, talking once about money, and she'd be like, yeah, you contracts for, like, especially a Broadway actor, they're pretty good. But as she pointed out, like, you have to put all your money away because it might be 6 months to 18 months between contracts. Right. I mean, that was just the nature of the work, unless you're, you know, the headliner. But most of the ensemble and the singers and the dancers, it's, you got the work when you could. So, yeah, that idea of making sure you've got that emergency fund, you got that 6 months or however much you need in the bank to make you feel comfortable. That's important.
It is important, but it's frighteningly rare, David, because you know, the average American is two paychecks away from default.
Oh, that is frightening. So if you're listening to this, go put some money into your savings account. You know, in fact, the only thing you should be splurging on is good beer.
Good beer and good wine is always a good splurge in my mind.
There you go. Which was my not so nuanced transition here. Before I talk beer, though, you know, I want to ask you. There's something that you had written about in our pre-call survey about something I'd never heard of, but I think I should have because it sounds awesome. What is Guitarra Azul? Or who is that? Or is it a band? I don't know what, but it sounds awesome.
Guitarra Azul is a band. They've been around for 10 plus years. I first saw them at the Pritzker Pavilion at the World Music Festival 10 years ago.
Okay.
My friend Steve Edwards' band, he tends to call himself Stefano in relation to that group.
Sure.
But it's fantastic. Steve writes all the music. He plays lead. David plays rhythm guitar, and they have very layered percussion and often flamenco dancers. And it's just a super fun group, and I really love their music.
Oh, that okay. Now I gotta check it. So, are they based in Chicago?
They're based in Chicago.
Oh.
And just as a brag, one of their videos recently topped 10 million views, which I think is kind of impressive for a world music band.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so is it Spanish music? Is it Latin American?
It's Spanish inspired. It's flamenco guitar, Spanish, you know, style
sure.
guitar, but with some world music feel and a bunch of different percussion and different melodic structures than traditional Spanish music. It's good listening. I think you'd like it.
I'm definitely gonna check it out. I will make sure to add that video with 10 million views onto the show notes. So we'll get them 10 million and a couple.
Awesome.
okay, cool. Yeah, I'm definitely gonna check that out. So any fun beverages that you've come across lately that you want to share?
Well, unfortunately, I developed a gluten sensitivity, so my beer drinking got strictly curtailed. I was very much a porter and stout fan.
Oh, yes, you were. It's good stuff.
But it is good stuff. And actually, there's a Belgian brewery that does make a decent gluten-free stout. But my sort of favorites of the gluten-free variety, I highly recommend Glutenberg Red and Glutenberg's IPA, which I think we could even pass by an aficionado such as yourself, and you would say this is a tasty beer.
Challenge accepted. So the name of the brewery is Glutenberg? Or
yes.
Okay, first of all, very punny.
That's the brand.
The brand,
so,
okay.
You know, a Glutenberg IPA was delicious, very hoppy, very tastes just like a regular out of the tap IPA. And I like their red quite a lot. I was never a big red fan as a regular beer drinker, but the Glutenberg red sort of has like some base note to it. That's nice.
Okay. Yeah. Reds, I mean, gluten or not, reds are hard. Like, I mean, it's hard to really have them land at a nice place between the hoppiness and the maltiness.
This is a great burger beer. Can't recommend it enough. Burger, fries, Glutenberg red.
Okay. I like it. And I've had some gluten-free beers, and yes, many of them do not quite make the cut. So if you're saying this can pass, that is high praise. And I'm gonna have to be on the lookout for them and check them out. And I'll report back. I'll let you know how they did.
Okay.
Well, we could probably talk beers. We could also probably talk about the future of work for another couple hours. But I think that means that this is probably a good place for us to come to a close today. You know, one thing I do always ask my guest at the end of our conversation is what's one piece of advice that you'd give someone to help them have a better day today?
Okay. I wrote a post about this and I get quoted back to myself, but people never attribute it to me. You can change one word in your self-talk or how you think about things and have a better day immediately. If you have something that you're kind of like meh about, or even that you don't like in your business,
okay,
say that you get to do it, not that you have to do it. So, you know, I get to, you know, input some stuff into my accounting software. Well, what does that mean? That means that I actually have some money that needs to get tracked. Okay, that's good. I have some clients. Or right. You know, I get to do my newsletter. Well, people actually read it. You know, not I have to do my newsletter. I get to do my newsletter. I look forward to it. I look every now and then people write me a thank you note after I send it out. So this have to versus get to immediately shifts the energy and you can feel much better. One of my fellow editors at Carol Ross Blog said that she started doing that with her workouts because she used to dread going to work out. And now she's like, I get to work out, which means that I'm healthy enough to be walking around and doing whatever I'm going to do at the gym. I get to.
That's awesome. Fantastic. So I get to do all of the post-production and marketing of the podcast.
That's right, David. You get to do it.
I get to. I'm a lucky man. Catherine, what is the best way for somebody to get in touch with you if they want to follow up and continue the conversation?
Well, my company is Point A to Point B Transitions. So Point A to Point B Transitions, that's plural, .com.
Awesome. Awesome. We will put that link and all of the other links to your social media presence and all the other cool stuff you do right into the show notes. And of course, thank you to our sponsor, Old Irving Brewery. I have been drinking their Della Kolsch, which is really a fantastic beer. Very crisp, very refreshing. I'm really enjoying it. And you can find them here in the Chicago area, but I know that they are working to get even more of a distribution outside of the city as well. And of course, thank you so much for joining us today. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please make sure you hit the subscribe button so you get new ones right in your podcatcher of choice. And also, if you want to give us a quick review or rating, it helps people find us in the completely overglutted landscape of podcasts in the early 20th century. So other than that, everybody, thank you so much. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. We all know the best way to find out about a new podcast is through our friends. So please help us out and share what we're doing through social media, or just tell someone. And if you could do us a favor and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform, like iTunes or Stitcher, that would be great. Want to get in on the conversation? Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.